horror fans, it's me, David Howard Thornton, Art the Clown himself, coming to you live from Burbank, California, and you're listening to 30 Screams or Less.
Warning, 30 Screams or Less may contain spoilers about movies that have recently been released. If you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, come back, and enjoy the show. Or, if you don't want to waste your time watching the movie and rather have two random horror dudes watch it for you, we got you covered as well. Welcome everyone to 30 Screams or Less, a horror movie podcast where we review horror movies in 30 minutes or less. Today we have a special guest who just so happens to be the creator of a film we recently reviewed called Circus of the Dead, Billy Bloody Bill Pond.
But before we get into it, Corey, last night I was looking in the mirror and you know what? My beard was looking gnarly. And I said to myself, I can't look like this. I gotta do something. So I decided to break out Beard Octane's beard wash and conditioner along with their beard oil, and dude, my beard looked amazing. I'm glad you turned me on to Beard Octane.
Yeah, of course. Like I said, I've been using their products for years and I can vouch for them. And whether you're pounding IPAs or chopping wood, you gotta look your best. Visit beardoctane.com and use the code 30screams10 at checkout for a 10% discount. It helps us. And like I said, the products are absolutely incredible. They're local too. They're based out of Connecticut. So help them out and support small businesses. We're not just slinging beard grooming supplies. We've been using them for a while.
Yeah, we have.
Billy, we can't wait to pick your brain and learn more about you and your career. Welcome to 30 Screams or Less. Billy, it's great to have you here tonight. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. I heard recently y'all had David Howard Thornton on there, so now you got me. So I guess you're going downhill from here. So.
Well, you know what I've noticed is like we're having this clown trend for the past few weeks. So
yeah,
we reviewed Circus of the Dead, and then we had David Howard Thornton on. Now we got you on, and we're going to also talk about a few things you got coming up that we're actually pretty excited for. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to let Corey start with this because he's real excited to have you here because we both loved Circus of the Dead. Corey, you got some questions. Fire away.
Yeah, so the first thing I want to ask you is how did you get started in filmmaking?
I knew I wanted to make films as a, you know, I'm an older dude, but I got to see Star Wars as like a 7 or 8 year old. And I knew I wanted to make movies after seeing that. But then the VHS revolution hit in the early 80s and I started renting anything I could get. You know, for some reason, my mom just let me rent movies. And I stumbled on Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2. And I loved that movie so much. Then I found Part 1 on video and I watched it, and it had a way of telling the story kind of a little bit better. I mean, I like a lot of comedy, but that just did something to me, that first Chainsaw Massacre. And I just knew I wanted to be a horror movie director. And I did haunted houses basically almost my whole life. I still do them to this day. And in there, I try to put people in their own little horror movie. And I knew that would come in handy for filmmaking, but I took a job in West Texas. When I lived in Dallas, I moved way out to West Texas because I got my foot in the door at a TV station and doing creative services. And I knew doing commercials and writing commercials and stuff every day would help, you know, teach me how to make movies. And that's exactly what I did. So I started off with making a fake trailer. Then I made a short and then jumped up to Circus of the Dead, which was my first feature.
Which was great, by the way. Didn't look low budget by any means. Actually, this movie looked like a feature film that you would watch at the theaters. I thought it came out really well. What was the budget like for that thing? I was looking at this has got to be $1 million.
Well, I heard y'all say that. The biggest laugh I got from your show is when you said it had to have $1 million budget. But no, it was probably, we spent about $1.52, maybe in some change. But no, on IMDb, I inflated it a lot because I thought, you know, if I put a little bit of amount of money, they're not going to take me serious or they're going to think I'm just a joke, you know?
Right.
So I kind of inflated it. But I want to say I probably got about, honest to God, money, 70, 80,000 in that first one.
Okay.
Oh, you'd never know it.
Yeah, we had no idea. Obviously, like we thought of friggin' million. So,
well, I can only say that's the people around me. You know, I worked in TV long enough, but I had a really good cinematographer, Gabe Ramirez, and great camera people, and you know, they had good eyes. And I think I'm a pretty good shooter too, because I've shot thousands of commercials. But you know, you kind of bring in the best to kind of do it. And it was a small circle of friends, and I was proud. When people asked me to grade my own film, I would put it around a 70 like maybe a C plus on some days.
Okay.
There are still a lot of things I would fix with it, but we had to learn as going. Even like filming action to this day, it still kind of intimidates me because that was kind of hard, you know, moving the cameras and stuff like that, especially when you're focus pulling and stuff.
Right.
So that's the kind of things I had to learn after doing that first one. So there's some things I feel like I could have improved on. But as far as look, it kind of helped it because it looked more traditional 70s filmmaking to me. You know, it was before everybody had the cheap cameras and using iPhones to film things. So it kind of had a more grandiose look. But as the masters will tell you, the secret is in the lenses. You get good lenses. Spend the money on the lenses.
Yep. That I know all too well because I have a Canon Rebel, like a T7, and it's great for the most part. But as soon as you throw on a different lens, just depth of field and everything,
yeah, it
makes such a massive difference. That's where you spend the majority of your money anyways. You get the base for the friggin' body, and then you just go fucking bonkers with all the lenses. And
then think about this, too. It's like technology will kick you in the ass. You know, you buy a camera now. It's out of date in 2 years. We bought a Canon C300 back in the day, and it was just HD. But now, you know, just to even get Netflix stuff, you got to have at least a 4K or something. So it's changing so quickly. But the money we spent on the lenses, we haven't lost anything on those. But the old body went from, we paid $15,000 for the old body.
Wow.
If I'm lucky, I could get, you know, on the used market, $1,500 for it. But so yeah, we can take the lenses to every camera we ever switch to.
Yeah, so I mean, is it a Canon or are you using like a Nikon or anything like that?
We're using the Canon C300 on the first one.
Oh, that's right.
We're using the Zeiss lenses. Yeah, the cinema lenses.
Right. Okay. So that makes sense because they use all the same connection depending on like, well, for the most part, all Canon cameras tend to use the same connection. So it's like interchangeable with the lenses. Very easy. You don't have to go out and be like, oh shit, I got to buy all new lenses or anything like that. Even like the, what's the new technology? Is that newer technology? Oh, mirrorless. I think they still do use those lenses for mirrorless too.
I trust my dude to do that. I've been out of TV for about 3 years now. He's saying we're going to move to the Blackmagic. The bodies are a little bit cheaper now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're like, he's got some 8K ones picked out or something. And we're going to try to film two cameras going all the time as opposed to just one and see if that helps. So,
well, it's smart because you can pick up things from different angles and then.
That's what we're going to try. Yeah.
Yeah. Just keep rolling because you'll never know what you're going to get on both those cameras. Like one of them could fuck up out of nowhere. And at least you have your backup camera going. So that way you have that safety net, essentially.
And I'd be surprised. I tell everybody too, as far as like doing post audio or something and voiceovers and stuff, it's like we didn't do any. And that one, we even got our audio right. And we had a first time audio kid, I call him. He was like 16 or 17 to do the audio. He was a friend of a friend's family members or something. But like the shots too, is we had over 1500 shots and we only missed, I think, two shots in the whole movie. Out of the 1500. Yeah. Wow. So we had our I's dotted and T's crossed. So, and I think that's because we worked in TV so long, a lot of us.
Got a lot of the experience beforehand. Yeah.
That makes sense. You've learned from like the pros and like really just diving in there and getting your hands dirty. And now it's like, okay, I can take these skills that I learned like on the job, professional type setting, and I can utilize it in your passion, which is obviously horror, short horror, or even a feature length film. And you know, you did bring up that you do haunts.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about Mr. Blister's haunt of Monster and Madman?
Well, Bill Oberst Jr., who's, you know, I dare say is the greatest actor on this freaking planet.
He was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
And as great of an actor as he is, you guys, he's even a better person. So let that soak in. He's the most wonderful person you'll ever meet in your life, too. A gentleman through and through. A very religious guy, too, believe it or not.
No shit.
For the type of character he plays, you wouldn't think he was like that behind the camera, you know?
I know. Yeah, because he's not. He's the sweetest, most humble person. He doesn't cuss in real life or none of that stuff. He's just a sweet guy. They're interviewing us for this, for Fangoria back in the day. And they're asking us what we'd be doing, you know, if we weren't doing what we're doing right now. And, I of course said I'd be a plus size swimsuit model. But he said he'd be a preacher. Or, you know, reverend or something. And I was like, holy shit. And this was kind of before I knew him really well. Since it's been 10 years, I know him really well. I consider him family. He introduced me to my beautiful girlfriend, Kelly Wilson Robertson. He tagged us both in a post, and she was in a movie he was in and whatever. But yeah, he's just a wonderful person. So I couldn't. Anyway, go back to what we're saying is, Mr. Blister lives here. That's Rusty Edwards. Ron Clapp lives here. That's Noodle Dome the Clown. Mm-hmm. And then Jumbo the Clown, Mike Williams, lives here. But Bill doesn't live here. So, and Rusty's the only one with spousal freedom that he can come and still play at the haunted house. And he'll do the front. He'll kind of give the rules and do a little skit up front and stuff like that. And we have this big haunted maze. Originally, the haunted house had two haunted houses. It was DEFCON 1 Haunted Warehouse. It was more of a Resident Evil, Day of the Dead kind of army base with zombies. And okay. The second haunted house was Circus of the Dead, Murder Maze. Doing that kind of made the whole backstory of these characters that I started making for the haunt. That's where Dollboy come from, Peppy the Mime. And even Mr. Blister before I knew Rusty. These characters are always kind of up in mine and Lee Ankrum's head. And we just started talking about it. And like you guys said with clown movies, is I think most of them are really bad. And my goal of doing this, and the only reason I wanted to challenge myself, is I wanted to say, what if you did a clown movie and actually kind of do it good and not try to do it cheesy, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That was my goal. And that was because I saw House of a Thousand Corpses and I love Sid Haig and Captain Spaulding so much. I go, it's like he's just a regular dude, you know? But he had some cheap costumes on. I wanted to go back and do traditional clown makeup and all that kind of stuff. So we did our due diligence on that too. But that's what Rusty does. He sits out there as Mr. Blister and just fucks with people. He wears inappropriate t-shirts and gives little kids candy cigarettes. And it's just Odessa, Midland is kind of, I think the population is like 200,000. And then there's a bunch of rural places around here. But it's that new show Landman, Taylor Sheridan's Landman, supposedly takes place out here. So it makes it seem real dangerous and stuff out here. But other than crackhead hookers and serial killers, it's not so bad.
All normal shit.
Yeah, just, oh, hey, there goes Jim the serial killer. Just hanging out.
Well, you know what's weird is that Samuel Little, I don't know if y'all remember, know much about serial killers. He was the,
I know. Yeah, not
the
personally,
black guy,
but
remember?
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. He come out and said that he killed somebody, a couple people here. Well, we were watching a thing and they're doing the documentary. It was on next to my property against my fence line where dumped one person. Now, it was before I had my property where the warehouse is, the haunted house. So I was like totally freaked out. They're out there filming. And, you know, me being a filmmaker, I was like, hey, you know, what are you guys working on? And they said, oh, we're doing this thing on here. This is where he dumped the so-and-so. I can't remember her name. But I was like, holy shit. It kind of come full circle. But he come down here before he died so he could talk to the law people and stuff. And I was going to try to meet him and stuff. But then I was thinking, you know what? You can't be that person, Billy. You need to be cool. But he had diabetes, was in a wheelchair. And I think he died shortly after that visit.
Did you hear about Zach Bagans' museum in Vegas?
Yes, of course.
And how he just got Samuel Little's remains?
Did he really? No, I didn't. That's crazy.
Yeah, I was there in September. He got Little's, you know, his ashes, and he has all the shit that he had with him in prison on display in his museum right now. His shoes, his toothpaste, it's wild.
He's got a lot of stuff. I've got this thing that I bought from when Barnum & Bailey was going out of business and they're liquidating all their stuff. I was going through their stock and I found this. It was kind of cheap, but it was a clown box. And it said, I can't remember the damn name, and I'm sorry, but it was one of the most famous clowns of all time, like from the late 1800s and stuff. And I got his makeup box and shit, and I've been sitting on it. It's still sealed from when the circus sent it to me, from their stuff, Dusty and all that. And I reached out to Zach hoping he was going to, you know, write me back and see if he'd be interested in this. Because him and his son actually committed suicide or something, this clown.
Oh, wow.
But I haven't ever heard back, so I don't know. I guess I need to get a little bit more fame before Zach Bagans learns who I am, but I'm going to keep it sealed, though, until I you know, see.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that because you've got a sequel coming out soon. But I wanted to circle back real quick regarding the haunts, because all these guys involved in it, it looks like they're part of the haunt. And I've noticed that with these haunts, especially like in Florida with your Halloween Horror Nights and, you know, some of the other haunts there, they're considered actors. And it's funny, like, I wouldn't have thought that they were part of the haunt because it seemed like they were legitimate actors. And I think it's probably because of the haunt they learned how to, like, act a certain way. I mean, would you agree? Because it doesn't feel like they're actors, but you kind of learn that skill from doing that stuff, I'm assuming.
Yeah, if you're going to play a killer like a Leatherface or like Dollboy, my brother-in-law, Sergio Gracita, he learned to move his head and things like that and grip the sledgehammer certain ways. And even when he is filming, he insists on using a real sledgehammer unless it's hanging over somebody's face or something. So, you know, he tries to be as real as he can, but he learned all that in the haunted house. Now, Rusty is just a monotone comedian. So Mr. Blister for him is just, he gets to put on that makeup and he can be more surly and asshole like he would really want to be in life. without getting, you know, in trouble. So I know it sounds weird, but it's just my friends are just fucking weird dudes. And in the movie, I seen them and I seen Rusty's face. We used to go to Hooters and watch football games and we barely knew each other just to meet up and watch the Cowboys. And I'm here. I said, dude, I'm going to make you a clown in my movie. You just got a weird face. And he was like, thank you. But
what a compliment.
But it's like, you know, I mean, he goes, well, I'm not an actor. And I go, well, you know, kind of just be yourself. I'm just going to make you more of an asshole. And Noodle Dome was the big one. And that's Ryan Clapp. In real life, he's like the most tech genius person I ever met. But on there, he is kind of like a slow, mentally challenged clown. But he's very childlike. And that's Ryan. He's so big, he'll sit in these folding chairs and we'll be in a place where there's a bunch of people, a concert, and it'll break and he'll fall on the floor. And he's just hilarious because he's like a big child. He'll play with his food when we're eating and weird stuff. So it's just, I kind of come up with that character out of, you know, watching him. And as far as the little dwarf guy, he was just a dwarf. So how in the hell do you get another one of those? So I just used him. But he is very mischievous. He would, Mike is real, without having a better word, is very horny. And he's always kind of, I always notice he rubs up on women's legs with his dick and shit. So I just kind of made him a little bit mischievous like that. And he doesn't speak much. He speaks Spanish better than he speaks English. So I just kind of stuck with that. But it's just basically, to me, a good director is whatever you have and whatever you have to use is getting the best out of them is the best thing you do. Like me being a fat ass, you guys, I wasn't meant to be a horse jockey. You know what I'm saying?
Same.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is like, you have to come to that realization in life. Like I've always done haunted houses. And when I was real young, I would dress up in them. I always got to play Leatherface, which is great. You know, I love playing Leatherface, but it's like, if I ever wanted to play Freddy, it's like, you know, look in the mirror, dumbass. So you got to be realistic because right now everybody and their dog wants to be in circus and they want to play a villain. But it's like, what do you bring to the table? You know what I mean? It's like, well, Bill Oberst is a small and, you know, he's muscular and all, but he's a real small guy. But he brings the prowess of his acting chops. I like characters. And first and foremost is like just visually, I have to be attracted to you in a horror sense to know that it could be something that could work. And then I'll turn that character up to 10. And I think that's the secret to doing that.
That makes sense. And actually, we were talking about David Howard Thornton about this and that, like having the makeup on and stuff kind of allows you to take you to that next level. So it sounds like
you got
the guys, like the right guys for the job. But now putting on this mask and putting on this persona, well, it's not a mask. You know what I mean? Putting on this persona, it allowed them to kick it up to that next level. You can see it conveyed in the film with how menacing they all are, especially Bill Oberst, who is unbelievable. Honestly, I think based on his role alone in Circus of the Dead, he could use that as a launching pad to a bunch of other things. And because he should be able to, too.
He won an Emmy before.
I don't know if you.
Yeah, for Take This Lollipop. It was that app game, you know, where you click it and it shows he's looking at your address and coming to your house. And it scared a lot of people. It's like an interactive app on Facebook back in the day. But now go back to David Thornton for a little bit. It's like, but see, here's the thing with that is I followed David back into MySpace days.
Oh, that's a while back.
And yeah, it's a while back because I followed him as his Joker. I said, wow, this guy's freaking awesome. And I said, I'm going to make this guy popcorn someday. And then lost track or whatever, you know, and then met Bill. And I was like, holy shit, this guy's unbelievable. So it's like it almost happened where he was that. And that's what I think that you can't do it with art because art is art. But even like they did the mean one, it's like, why ain't you got this guy talking? That's his greatest gift. As great as he is a pantomime, I bet this guy's dialogue is freaking phenomenally. He's a good actor. He needs to be challenged there. Somebody needs to take that dude. You know, maybe he'll get a Freddy or somebody, you know. But if somebody makes him another slasher that's silent, that would be a waste on his part because, god dang, that guy's got some acting chops too, and they need to let him run.
Well, he said on our podcast that they shot a, what did he call it, Steve?
It's kind of just a teaser video.
He said they shot like a 15-minute video of him in full Joker costume, and it's coming out within the next month or so. Him and his friend
good.
Shot
well,
it.
Oh, good. Well, hopefully he'll get it, yeah. And he's got a little bit of fame behind him now and see it, but it's like, I don't know. It's like they always go for these Hollywood types or whatever, so we'll see. That's the same thing with Bill Oberst is how that guy's not a household name. I mean, come on. You know, like seriously. It's like, a lot of people don't respect this indie stuff enough, and it's just now happening thanks to Terrifier and Damien for getting this stuff out here. But thank God somebody's actually taking it serious And hopefully it keeps on going. Hopefully that's what's going to happen with part two. And I was going to say, too, about those costumes and those characters is we made a clown movie back before it was, because we shot this in 2013. And, you know, these guys are just doing, as I said, and all this kind of stuff. None of these people involved with this movie knew it was going to be what it was. But I was going out to every film festival and every convention screening the movie and watching these reactions, sitting in the back watching this. And it's like, I knew I was onto something. And even then, I've learned so much by watching these screenings and watching so many other films that I think I could even do more. And hopefully that's what's going to come together for part two, is I'm really going to do something that just kicks people right in the fucking balls.
Yeah, I could see that happening. And I honestly could see it in theaters soon because, well,
and that's after the goal.
Yeah, that's the goal. Yeah, because Terrifier did open up the floodgates, if you will, for now. Mm-hmm. So now, like, theaters can be like, okay, well, we can have these indie movies, and it's not a big problem. Like, people are clearly going to go out and see these movies if there's hype behind them. So they're like, hey, whatever makes us money, who gives a shit?
But it's as great as Terrifier is, you know? It's like, I think the biggest success to Terrifier, and I got a lot of stick with it. People always say, you know, it always makes it look like I'm bashing it and all this kind of stuff. And you know, I always make myself look like funny when I, you know, talk shit about it or whatever. But I do know those guys, and they're real good to me. And they know I'm just kidding around. But I think it's the damn fans. I think the fans is what caused it to blow up. I think it got enough people out there, and then it's kind of tapped into that mainstream now. I think the fans was the secret to this success, and that's why I try to take care of the fans like I do, is because I really think at the end of the day, that's the people that's going to go out and support you on your first theatrical weekend, and if you get a little buzz there, then that's going to blow it up for the rest of the time. And what they do, they come out and hit like 20 million with part two, and I know part three now is over 100 million, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's coming back to theaters for Christmas.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. And you're right that the audience dictates the success of the movie. Let's say the movie sucked, right? And people just didn't like it. What would happen? Like, you wouldn't see Art the Clown merchandise. Yeah, you wouldn't see shit. I mean, us horror fans, we'd probably enjoy it because of, like, the absolute insanity of it. But if you're putting out a bad product, people aren't going to fucking watch it, and it's not going to be as big as it is. Now, So, again, this opens up at least the opportunity for indie film directors to start getting their movies back into theaters, because I think Hollywood did away with that in favor of obviously your bigger blockbusters and just anything that would generate money as opposed to indie film. But I think now indie filmmakers have a chance again, and I'm excited for it because it's an alternative. Not everyone wants to see a friggin' bad Marvel movie or something. They want to be scared. They want to see something ridiculous, whatever. And I can't
and
wait to see where
things go. And they're spoon-feeding. They're spoon-feeding the Blumhouse and all this kind of stuff.
Yes.
And then that the even worst of the worst is whenever they say, well, if we remake this, then at least the name alone is going to bring us X amount of money.
Nope.
You know? And then they put the, you know, $2 effort and film it in fucking bumfuck Egypt, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I'm talking to you. And it's like, don't. It's like, how can you not film it in fucking Texas and feel that and smell it? The first one just smelled like Texas off the fucking screen. It was just perfect. That's where they're missing. And but you got to look at where horror's come to. It's looked like what The Walking Dead did and stuff. We laugh at it now, and, you know, I could barely get past season four until I stopped, but it really opened up everyday people to start digging horror. And if you would have said there's going to be a clown movie called Terrifier that's going to come out where he splits a chick in the middle upside down, I would say you're crazy. But it's like, that takes off now, and apparently everybody loves that. But in real life, we're watching U.S. soldiers getting their head cut off by freaking wackos, you know, in the Middle East, and it's like accidentally pops up on your screen and shit. So it's like, just the world is such a nasty, mean place that watching a funny horror movie that you know is fake is actually entertainment now to a lot of mainstream people.
It really is. And yeah, I'm excited that the mainstream is starting to pick up on it a little bit, because horror needs to get out there more. And we can't just be forced to Blumhouse stuff. I mean, don't get
to
me
what
wrong.
They give us,
Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of Blumhouse movies that are pretty decent. And I know they're spoon feeding us, but sometimes they put out some serious bangers. But
you put two is like you got A24 doing it too. Yes. It should be everybody. Everybody should have a good chance at least. But here's where the issue comes in. And this is where, you know, well, fuck Billy for saying shit like this, but it's these other indie filmmakers and stuff. You know, I love a lot of them, and a lot of them are best friends too, but it's like, I want everybody. I want me. I take this shit serious, and you need to put out and give it your best effort in every freaking movie you do, and not cut any corners and really try. But there's so many people just putting out anything now, and that's what flooded and gave everybody a bad reputation.
Mm-hmm. I could see that for sure. I don't see what the point is in just going half-assed with it. Doesn't make sense. Why would you be involved in something and just be like, yeah, we'll just get it out real quick and
Why. I'll tell you why. As far as an indie level, it's because, in quotations, hey, I'm a filmmaker. Hey, I'm an actor. I'm an actress. I'm a this. And that's all cool and stuff, you guys. But what happens in the major fucking leagues, right? Are you going to say, hey, I'm a pretty good batter. I'm going to go play for the Texas Rangers. No, you're not.
Nope.
If anything, if you're halfway decent, you're going to start in the minor leagues and work your way up. But there's nothing like that with films, and that's what sucks. And there's so many people doing it, and then the rest of us get put in this category of sucking, and there's not enough eyes that get on it. That's what I said. This is what you guys mentioned on Circus, is we tried to get it out in 14. I could tell you about the nightmare of getting movies out, but it kind of technically come out. We put it out in 17, but it really wasn't officially released until Dredd did it in 2020.
Wow. Yeah.
And a lot of people are just now stumbling on it. And there's where the thing is. They go, oh, it's just a clown movie. Okay. And they've seen so many clown movies that are a joke that some people don't give it a chance. You know, I give something a chance. I'll give it what I call a 10 or 15 minute chance and put it on. And I can usually tell if the audio sounds good and things are in focus and, you know, it's not just watching, you know, somebody's YouTube video, I'll give it a chance. But if they can't get me through that, I'm going to have to turn it off.
Oh, that's fair. And I feel like horror movies need to come out like they just need to pack a punch at the beginning anyways. They need to suck the audience in, give you a brief idea of what the hell's going to happen. Like slasher flicks, right? Slasher flicks should have at least one kill just to kind of set the pace of the movie, give you an idea of what you're in for. And then you just kind of work your way through the natural progression of the story. I mean, we saw a movie recently where took an hour before we saw an on-screen kill.
Right. And then what's the point of that? You already lost them.
Yeah, they lost me real quick, but because I commit to the bit, I just watched it, and then we reviewed it.
That type of shit makes me, I hate doing it, but I'm actually checking to see how much runtime is left in the film, because like I'm so bored and checked out, you know? And I hate that.
Well, yeah, the bad stuff takes you out. You know, when you can't hear them because the natural sound audio is too loud as far as the speaking and stuff, the dialogue. You know, that kind of stuff takes me off. But if you go back to that slasher thing, I do a lot of, like at Texas Frightmare Weekend, I do like filmmaking 101 for people that are wanting to start out making films and stuff. But I go back to like a doll boy kind of thing, is you need kind of they go, well, how do you do it? I go, you need a cool character that people are going to like, even if they don't see the movie, they just see a picture. To me, I kind of start there, you know. That's why certain things don't move me like others, because if you just see, you know, scrawny teen dude with a fork and he's going around killing people, it don't do as much for me. It's like, give me something magical that I won't forget. Like even Jason wasn't cool until he got a hockey mask, you know?
Yeah,
and now he's bigger than the movie, you know? It's like even Art the Clown. Damien did that Nine Circles of Hell or whatever it was, and he had a lot of different characters, but who stood out? Who's the golden goose is Art the Clown, because it's just so fucking cool.
Yep, exactly.
You know, you got to make something cool, and then you can't turn on a spotlight on them and see them. You got to keep a little bit of mystery to your kills and stuff, you know, at first, and build up this stuff. And I think that's the secret to it, is, you know, you just can't do just anything.
Yeah, exactly. You got to have some sort of character that's just really going to stand out. Again, like, let's say it's a kid, I don't know, he's holding a pitchfork. Who gives a shit? I'm going to be like, kid, stop. And I'm going to throw a rock at him or something. I'm going to take the pitchfork and I'm going to walk away. And it's not going to fucking matter. And it's like, movie's over, done. That's it. So having a killer, having a character like that really does help to sell the movie. People go, oh shit, what the fuck is this, right? They're looking at it. They're intrigued by the monster or killer or whatever. And then they're more likely to see it.
Well, go back to this now. A thing I like to do is, and sometimes they say, what's your best quality, Billy? And other than my supple breast, I would say my best quality is polishing turds, okay? So let's go back to the little kid with the pitchfork. We do a little kid with the pitchfork. He's got some dirty overalls on, no shirt. He's kind of albino, like Johnny Winters and them. He's got no hair because he's got that disease where he can't grow eyebrows or nothing. He's been kind of demon-fied. He's got Master Poe from Kung Fu eyes, solid white eyes, and he's got a coonskin hat on, and he's kind of demon-fied. That shit's scary.
Yeah, for sure.
Now you got a cool character. They go, so you're saying, Billy, you need a 7-foot guy that weighs 400 pounds. No, that's interesting. Scary. What's scary?
Yeah, regular kid, not scary. But if you see a demonic looking kid, a little bit scarier, for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's not normal. People need to see the not normal. Like when they're watching a movie, they don't want to fucking just feel like they're watching just their everyday life. It's an escape.
With that said, you guys, you can make those other movies, right? You can even call them horror movies, but that ain't what's moving now. You better, horror fans want something. That's why Terrifier did what it did. Mm-hmm. They want something and you better fucking deliver, you know?
Yeah.
The killer's the stepson and he was just mad because the mom didn't like him as much. And it's like, that's cool, but save that shit for horror, Hallmark, you know?
Yeah.
These fans are picky these days and you better, like I said, we better give them something. We want a character that can be put on a t-shirt or something because they're looking for the next, you know, icons. And it's hard to crack that circle. What art's doing is fucking rare air, you know, cracking that icon slashers and stuff. It's fucking tough to do.
It is. And I think I was talking to someone about this recently, that horror icons, it takes a special image, I guess, because, you know, we have Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, Leatherface. We have like basically those four heads on the Mount Rushmore of horror. And then what else in between? I mean, you might have Victor Crowley. Am I drawing a blank?
Yep.
Yeah.
Pinhead, Chucky. There's some.
Okay. There's some.
You're gonna get hard name after 20.
Exactly.
You know.
So it's been a little while since we've had something fresh. And that's when Terrifier came out and people were like, oh, shit, what is this? And then like the imagery of art took off. And now you see him all over the fucking place. I mean, shit, you
everywhere.
See like everywhere.
Little kids are wearing it. I see little kids.
It's fucking crazy, man. It's absolutely wild. And shit, Corey, do you want to ask a question?
Yeah, this is kind of a segue into what we were just talking about.
Okay,
with characters need to have an image that people are going to latch onto. Can you tell us where your inspiration for Papa Corn, Mr. Blister, Jumbo, and Noodle Dome came from?
That inspiration for them come from me. It is me and my dark thoughts and stuff. It was Lee, my buddy. He just passed away less than a year ago, but we were, you know, kids and did haunted houses together. And, you know, this was the dark stuff. If you could be a sexual deviant, what would you think and do? If, you know, it's putting yourself into these bad things and getting to play serial killer, so to speak. That's where those come from. Then you kind of see other things. Like when talking to Bill before the first movie, we come in and we did a scene where he cuts that tongue out. Do y'all remember that?
Oh, I remember that. Yep.
And he says, paging Dr. Noodle Dome for an extraction. It kind of, to me, was like a little Jerry Lewis. And I guess he saw me grimace off screen. And he come to me after and was telling me, you know, hey, I need your direction and stuff. You know, don't be intimidated. Because I was a first-time director to a star, you know, and stuff. And I didn't know what I could or couldn't say or do. But then he goes, well, what would you see, you know, Popcorn as? And I go, he would be Jack Nicholson from Cuckoo's Nest, maybe a little bit of Shining. He would be Daniel Day-Lewis from Gangs of New York.
I could see that now. Yeah.
That's where the character molding come from after the ideal of that person. Because I couldn't make him a big fat ass like me, because that's not what Popcorn would be. He had to be like Bill. So I didn't make him look like me or Lee or anything. We were looking for something because we seen the whole group as something. You know, Mr. Blister's the driver, you know, the wheel man. Noodle Dome's the muscle. And Little Jumbo's the, I don't want to say slave, but he does all the little dirty work.
Yeah, I always thought it was funny that, like, he was a short person and then his name was Mr. Jumbo.
Yeah, it's what is that, the oxymoron, like when you get jumbo shrimp?
Yeah. It's never jumbo, ever. Never big enough. I love shrimp.
But that, you know what sucks about that is everybody thinks that Noodle Dome is jumbo. When I'm at the conventions, I have a poster or a banner behind me that's got all four clowns. And they say, which one are you? And I always point to Jumbo. And they look at me weird, you know, because I'm like 6'2". But it's like movie magic, guys.
Oh, hey, we say movie magic all the time. Yeah. Usually we say it when we can't explain something at all.
Yeah, we had movie luck. If Circus come out to be such a good movie, I feel like there was a little bit of blessing going into it too. But I would give all the credit to the world as the crew and the actors and the people that helped us or donated their place to let us film. It's like that beer store, you guys. I went and asked that lady. She let me use it. Not only did she let me use it for a week, she gave me the keys to the place.
Oh, shit.
She didn't ask for anything in return.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was wondering about that because, like, on the episode where we were reviewing Circus of the Dead, I was like, got all these locations and shit. And that's why I was wondering why, like, what the budget was. But
and none of
man,
them
you
we
lucked
paid.
Out. Yeah.
You big time locked out.
Well, doing here is I know everybody. The police, as I said, hey, we're going to be shooting out in this thing, and we're probably going to be firing some blank guns and stuff, and I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. And they go, when are you doing it? And they go, hey, this is Charles, man. He goes, what time are y'all doing it? I'll come out there and put up some barricades for you and hang out if you don't mind. I go, I don't mind. Come on out. And hell, the cops would come out and sit on set and watch and all this kind of stuff. That's the way you do it in a small town. I hear in L.A. you have to get just to film on a street corner. You got to have permits and people charge you an ass load of money.
Right. Yeah. Actually, that makes sense. It's more of a tight-knit community and where everyone's kind of looking out for each other, I'm assuming.
And you do when you work in television and you film, you know, 1,000 commercials in your 15, 20-year career, you know a lot of people. You know, I know people that own car dealerships, own every restaurant you could think of, everything. Unfortunately, I had to bring the circus people in, but, you know, I fell in love with them. They're just good people.
Yeah.
And they saved the same tent for me. It's been 10 years now. And they say, hey, we got the tent, Billy. Let's go for part two. And that was the first people I called before I started this. Actually, it's the second. I called Bill first to make sure he was down because no Bill Oberst, no Circus of the Dead.
Yeah, you need him. He is the fucking star of the show. He's so good. He is so good. Yeah, there's like this one scene where Papa Corn is running around with his pants down, just fucking dick swinging in the air. And I'm like, how the fuck is he pulling this off? Because you could easily get in trouble with that. So that's why I was like, wow, okay, you must have some serious pull going on.
Well, you know what's bad about that is I worked for a TV station back then, and yep, a local millionaire owned the TV station. He's an older guy. He's still around. But the middleman, when he found out I did all that, I didn't tell him until it was already done. And the older guy has no interest in watching the movie or any of that kind of stuff. He's the one that even invested the money in and stuff. He was just a fan of me, you know, because I worked for him for so long and, you know, always went above and beyond. And he just liked me as a person. So that's how that happened. Now, would things have changed if he saw Dick coming down his parking garage? Probably. But we didn't tell anybody until the movie was done. Some of the producers on it, when they read the script to give the approval, they even cut the head fucking scene and said, no, you're not going to do that. And but I did it. And the cut that was shown to some people and the cut that was put out were two different cuts.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was like a short of 1 minute. That's all I could show. But no, they just did it. They just trusted in doing it. I do some fucked up shit, but I'm a damn good person and have a good reputation of treating people the right way. So I think that's why I get what I get as far as local stuff. And to put these guys on the map is awesome. Friday Night Lights was filmed here, you know, with Billy Bob and Tim McGraw. Also, they're filming Landman here now. Tommy Lee Jones did a movie here that I got to work on when I was working at the TV station called Three Burials. I don't know if y'all ever seen it. Great movie, though. Y'all should check it out.
I think I've heard of it, but I don't think I've checked it out. I'm going to check it out.
Barry Pepper's a badass actor, too. He's awesome. But I'm just trying to put these guys on the map. Another movie that was filmed in this area, too, was called Fandango with Costner and Judd Nelson.
Fandango.
I'm telling you, it's underrated, you guys. Now, these aren't horrors, but watch Three Burials, watch Fandango with Kevin Costner.
Okay. Put that on the list for sure.
Yeah,
you'll watch anything. Yeah, it's a good movie. Fandango, both of those movies are good for wives, too, and stuff. They're just good movies.
Cool.
Three Barrels is a modern Western movie with Tommy Lee Jones and Barry Pepper, and Fandango is just like a college road trip thing. And I dare say that might be from the 80s, you guys.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, and it's how it went under the radar for so long, I got no clue.
Yeah.
But anyway,
well, it makes sense.
I'm just trying to put this place on the map because it deserves it.
Yeah, I mean, well, it makes sense that's from the 80s because Judd Nelson being in the Breakfast Club and such, and he did a lot of movies then. But then later on, he did like a lot of B-movies, things that you would see like kind of on the shelf of Blockbuster, that the wall wasn't filled with like one movie. It was just like, one here and there type deal.
And you see some stinkers sometimes, but both of these I would not consider stinkers. Now, Three Barrels isn't No Country for Old Men, but...
Yeah,
because you know that's above and beyond every damn thing. But
that
it's a damn
phenomenal.
Good movie. I promise, Three Burials is good. Same thing with Fandango. Now, funny story on that stuff is that I got a call at the TV station and asked if I use the Avid, you know, editing system.
Yeah.
At the TV station, I said yeah. So he said, well, somebody's going to bring by some stuff. Just want to know you can do some editing. Well, the editor from Tombstone come in. It was an Italian guy. He did Tombstone and like 100 other famous movies. And he come in and was sitting over my back while I was editing. And Tommy Jones was outside my editing bay. And I went out to shake his hand. He didn't even look at me in my eyes or nothing. You know, but
Jesus.
I was like scared. And I did what I did for that Three Burials. There's a scene where a guy and a girl is in a motel room. And they turn a TV on and all that's there is like porn. And I did the porn switching look. So it's like people, you know, screwing and yeah. Switch to static and then come back on. Like that's what I edited for that movie. And I got like $500 an hour for doing it.
Holy no shit. Credit. I'm in the wrong business. Damn.
Well, no, that was the only time that ever happened. But it was just cool because I felt like, you know, if this could happen, why can't I make my own movie and everything? So that's where I just kind of got the inspiration.
Yeah. So you did that and you're like, I can fucking do this. I'm going to.
Yeah,
I'm
but it was real weird because I had a complete glass edit bay. It was glass on three sides. And there was an older Hispanic lady vacuuming and we're playing these big screen TVs or playing a, you know, boob chick jumping up and down on a dude and all this and big schlongs. And she kept looking over there like it was the weirdest thing, which it was a really weird situation. And Tommy Lee Jones hanging outside there. And it was a neat experience.
Oh, it sounds it. I mean, just Tommy Lee Jones just hanging out, you know, vibing. Just looking over occasionally, watching porn, I guess.
But I was scared, you guys. That was an intimidating ass fucking thing, I tell you.
Oh, well, I bet.
Well, I mean, that's like anyone, like, watching over your shoulder as you're working. But let alone Tommy Lee Jones. I mean, that's a whole different ball game. I'd be like, dude, you're going to have to go and film a movie while I'm doing this. Because, like, I can't do this while you're here.
Well, I get a lot of weird Forrest Gump things. Where, like, they say that about me a lot, but, like, after we finished Circus or whatever, I was, like, thinking, man, if I could just get one of, like, Tarantino's editors to watch Circus of the Dead and they could give me some feedback, you know, because I trust my friends and family, but it's like your dad saying, you know, my dad says I'm a good kisser, you know, kind of thing. You know, I wanted some legitimate, real fucking feedback, you know, from somebody that didn't know me for shit. And at that time, you know, Sally Minkie died, you know, his editor. Mm-hmm. And he moved on to somebody else. And I'm not going to say no names because I don't want to throw this stuff out there. But
sure,
his editor said they just wrapped up Guardians of the Galaxy and they're on vacation with their family. But call his assistant editor, who at the time was working on like Fast and the Furious 2 or something. And I made friends with this guy and asked him what it would, you know, cost me to send the movie to him and stuff like that. And I know what he's thinking. He's thinking, who is this jackass that's willing to pay me money to watch his film and give him some feedback? Well, I did it. And, you know, I sent him that and he wrote back and he goes, hey, first and foremost, he goes, I was expecting this to be shit. And that really kicked ass. That was a really good movie. He goes, I really think you have a future in here. And he goes, okay, with that said, let's cut this, this, and this, and this. Yeah. And it helped a lot. But it's like, I know them and I got a, you know, an ace in my pocket or up my sleeve, but I'm just saving for the right time. So if I can get part two to where it needs to get this theatrical thing, I just hope the stars are going to align. I hope it's going to be more stars and less Uranus.
Yeah, exactly. I could tell with the first Circus of the Dead is that there wasn't any lull to it. It was just constant go and everything just made sense. Everything just flowed well. So it makes sense that like this guy probably came and it's like, okay, maybe like trim these few things off, but you can kind of see it in that.
Well, like, the first cut, we're at 145 now.
Yep.
The first cut that we showed at Texas Frightmare Weekend, the rough cut in 2014, I think was 2 hours, 10 minutes.
Damn. Yeah, that's a long one.
But like the doll boy scene was inside the movie. And I made the call. I said, you know what? I'm going to just add that to after credits.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Because if people want to stick around, they can watch it. But it doesn't like, I'm not going to say it's taken away from the film, but sometimes you run the risk of it kind of breaking the film up and like ruining that flow.
Well, and you know, I come up with that idea by talking to the guy that was working on the Marvel stuff. And I said, I ought to reward fans too, because good fans, if they stick through credits, they deserve to see something cool.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
So anything you watch, yeah, from here on out, I always watch the after credit stuff. So
trust me, I do. And it's because of Marvel.
Yep. I think it's smart.
Well, yeah. Well, just give them a little bit more. Unless your movie sucks and they're going to get up before the credits, I leave after your opening credits. But
I mean, I watched Red One the other day, and I stayed until after the credits hoping for something, but
nothing
redeeming.
Oh, my God. Don't watch it.
Well, I was thinking Red One hadn't appealed to me in any way, so I'll wait till it's on, you know, one of the streamers, and I'll see it for free or something. But
yeah, it's
I mean, it's the, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'm like, this is going to be good. And I love Christmas movies, but yeah, that was, oh, and J.K. Simmons. I'm just, you know, you can't go wrong with him.
You can't go wrong. What about, do you ever see Rare Exports? To me, that's my favorite Christmas movie.
That's the one in Russia, right? Is it Russia?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or as I like to say, Bumfuck Egypt or whatever, but they got that one right. But you know what's on that one is they come out with the short first. If you ever find the short version of Rare Exports, that's the best fucking version.
Really?
Yeah, okay. It's a short, and it's hilarious and awesome. But just the whole concept of that is pretty cool. And that's when I applaud things. So people ask me what's my favorite scary horror movie. I think I'd probably say Rare Exports just because it inspires me so much. That creativity and stuff is just, you know, that's what I dig.
Oh, yeah. I do enjoy some creativity when it comes to movies. A lot of psychological movies I'm a big fan of because there's always something fucking weird happening. There's just more thought put into it.
Very much so.
Yeah. So, you know what? This actually brings me to my next question. So, from what I was kind of reading is that primarily it looks like your bread and butter was short films over feature-length films. Would you say it's more challenging to do a short film and having to jam a story in less time, or a feature-length film where you have more wiggle room to expand upon a story?
Well, the feature films is harder just because of the mountains you got to move.
Okay.
A short film, you could make a decent short film in a couple of weekends, but where a feature, that ain't going to happen. We pressed Circus in about a month and a half, and that was almost filming every other day. I mean, every day, and only getting one day off every 10 or 15 days.
Wow.
So it was freaking hard. Here's what I say. If you're somebody starting out, see, originally Circus of the Dead was a fake trailer that I did for Grindhouse, Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino.
No shit.
Remember they did? Yeah, no shit. They had a contest, and I entered that contest and did pretty good. There's one out there called Cirque de la Muerte on my YouTube page. We did it in 2017. Then that inspired me. I said, okay, go for a short. And then we did the short Doll Boy. So I would tell everybody to do a fake trailer, because at Texas Frightmare Weekend, I host this trailer competition, or actually a trailer showcase. And I show the fake trailers, you know, from sometimes there's pros that turn some into me, sometimes it's amateurs. And I think that's what teaches you the best to see where you're at, because you'll learn what your weakness is in doing a 2.5 minute, you know, fake trailer. It's like, hey, your video really sucks. Or, hey, your audio is really horrible. Or, hey, this acting is, all they got to do is say a couple word line. And if they ain't doing good on that, they shouldn't be acting. Mm-hmm. So you learn you're good and what you're good at and what you're bad at. And then you bring in people what you're bad at. So I tell everybody the fake trailer is the way to go. And I do that every year for Texas Frightmare. And that's one of the biggest things. We fill up a big old room with probably a couple hundred people. And they watch these fake trailers and hoot and holler and stuff. And the funnier and over the top, the better. I've even had elementary school kids do it for school projects and stuff. We'd use an old government footage from the 50s and stuff, you know. It came, you know, from outer space, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and it promotes creativity and all that kind of stuff. But that's why it's not a competition, I tell everybody, because, you know, who am I to judge what's good as far as art? Because art's so subjective.
Yeah.
You know, what you like and, you know, what I like might be two different things, you know.
Oh, yeah. Corey and I, when we review some movies, it doesn't happen often, but sometimes it's like, I hated it. I loved it. And we're like, what?
And it's okay. That's what I tell you. It's okay that we don't think the same.
Yeah. No, it's fine. That's the beauty of the podcast, is that we are two different people who like look at movies two different ways. But sometimes we just come together and we go, yep, that was fucking great. And
it makes good content.
Yes, it makes
good questions. That's what I like about you guys. Your questions, your observation is good.
Yes.
Because I've been on a lot of podcasts that sometimes I don't even feel like they watch the fucking movie.
Really?
Oh, jeez. Let's just get this guy on to talk about his movie that we haven't seen.
Yeah, and, yeah. Well, some just want, they want that thing because you're going to, you know what I mean? It's just, I'm a horror fan. That's why I make horror movies. You guys are horror fans. That's why y'all doing a podcast on it. It's just, you know, real fans, you know, love good stuff. And we're all looking for that next high of something really good.
Yeah,
me too.
Absolutely. Same. All of us. I think all of us want that like next thing that's going to make us feel good and like help us escape reality a little bit.
That's kind of why we do this every week. We do a new episode every single week where we pick a film to watch together and just talk about it. Mm-hmm. Something we haven't seen, you know?
And what's the best thing you want to do is like say, hey, I seen something last night you got to fucking watch. That's what we live for. So we could tell those friends that you got to see this shit.
Yep. And that's what we try to do. And we do a lot of indie films for that sole reason. It's like, if we like it, we're like, yep, you guys got to check this out. And we bring exposure to like indie films. I mean, obviously we could be a bigger podcast, but we like to think we're doing our part for the horror community and getting these movies out there and helping spread the word for these movies that people may not know about. I mean, hell, I didn't know about Circus of the Dead until Corey's like, I've been wanting to watch this for 10 years. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
I was like, hey, Steve, watch this trailer. I sent him the trailer and he's like, oh, we got to watch this.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, it just falls between the cracks. There's a lot of good indie filmmakers out there, too, that I know. And I watch their stuff. They send me. It's funny. It's not DVDs as much anymore. It's like a link.
Yeah.
But the old days, it was DVDs. I got a freaking probably about 50 DVDs from other people's films. But no, and it's fun to sit around with them and talk. But, you know, the one thing they all have in common is they're all fans. They're all horror fans. Yeah.
And I've listened to some of those podcasts. They seem very, like, straightforward, you know, just asking questions and just kind of. Like, I don't know, like, it's not conversational, really. I mean, we try to make it more of a conversational thing and have a good time and just bring exposure and help people get their fucking name out there, you know?
Yeah.
We love it. I appreciate it,
guys. Every one of them, because it's like you said about Marvel. When Marvel comes out, they're as big as they're going to be. When Terrifier come out, they had to climb the thing. And that, in my film, is they started a long, long time ago. And, you know, it's just taken 10 years to get you to watch it. See?
Yeah, it took me a long time because I had fucking no idea. It's funny.
So that's why I say it's just, you know, two eyes at a time, or I guess one eye at a time if you think about it. But if somebody just only got one eye because they're a pirate, but I don't know. But you just get as many sets of eyes as you can on it, and you just keep working from there. You keep shaking babies and kissing hands.
That's what you got to do. You have to network. You have to do the right thing. You have to, what is that, like rub the right shoulders? Basically,
yes. Rub the
shovels. Yeah.
Well, now you're talking about the casting couch, but
That's Jesus. I haven't been there yet. So yeah, Corey, you got a few more questions.
Yeah. So you'd briefly talked before about the beer store scene, and personally, this was my favorite scene in the movie.
Fucking brutal. Brutal.
When Papa Corn is holding the gun in the cashier's mouth, I didn't fucking blink that whole scene. I was so glued to it. I was just wondering if you could talk more about how that scene came to be, and
We had a week to shoot it. It was a hard scene to shoot because everything's got to be blocked out and stuff. And that's when you're a first-time filmmaker, you don't understand that. You got to have, like, people in the background, you know, like somebody's at the video game, Mr. Blister, and then you got Noodle Dome over here, and you got to make all the timing and stuff worked out. So it was hard, but we could go into the store at night. They closed at 11. We could go in after 11, and we had to be out before 5 in the morning. And we spent, I think, 4 or 5 nights at night doing that. And I'll tell you the worst thing that happened in there was we fired off those shotgun blanks. And I guess like in earthquakes or whatever, you don't realize it, but there's so much built up dust and stuff on things. When we did it, like 10 pounds of dirt fell off the ceiling and the live pictures and everything and covered us like we were in an earthquake. So we had to clean the fucking store because we couldn't get in trouble, you know, by having it all jacked up.
Right.
And
right.
We spent 2 hours cleaning all the products and everything.
Well, shit, that means the least you can do for them to offer you the place for free.
Oh, yeah. But they're great. I think that the lady retired and sold the store. I did donate them a movie poster to hang up there, and they had it hanging, but I haven't been out there in a while to see if the new people has it or not.
Mm.
But maybe I'll take the girl out there and we'll go out there and check out that place again.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, we shot a movie here. You know, I think that'd be really cool to show her.
The video game I own, I took it out there, but I forgot to get the side graphic made for it. I wish I would have had the side graphic on it, and that's what I hate about that.
Yeah.
And I wanted Mr. Blister just sitting there playing that game because he's playing a game, you know, with the naked women, and it's making those things where she was going, oh, yeah, feels good.
Yeah.
You know, while a real person was being raped. It's just kind of the imagery of that and the audio stuff on it is what I was trying to build with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, a lot of people get turned off because it's kind of grapey, we'll say, to protect it online. But I just felt like it needed to be, and I tried to shoot it as best I could without being gratuitous.
Right.
Part two will be just as grapey.
Oh, so, I don't
gonna
know.
There's going to be green and purple grapes.
Yikes. Did you get in any sort of trouble filming in there? I mean, I'm thinking that if you're going to be in there after hours, and I know it's kind of a tight-knit community, but did anything happen where maybe cops came by and they see a half-naked girl and you've got a gun and it's like, uh-oh, might have a little bit of a situation here and you have to explain yourself?
Nope. We didn't have anything like that whatsoever. The worst thing we had out in public is we were shooting downtown by that theater, mm-hmm. and there was a club, I guess a block over, and one of those big dualies, because you know everybody in Texas has a big dually.
Yep.
And it kept blowing one of those diesel horns.
Oh, God.
But see, with that said, is I called the cop friend whose kid was helping us out on set, and he come out there in his car and run him off. So,
That's amazing.
Thing of that small-knit community. That's where it comes in handy.
Yeah, that's got to be really cool just to have, like, live in that kind of community. Sometimes I wonder what it's like to, like, live in a community like that where everyone just kind of knows each other and just, like, you know, helps each other out. It's almost like a Hallmark movie where everyone I don't know if it's like that, but, you know, you're not selling any Christmas trees down in Texas. But you might.
Think of it like this, you guys. Think of it. It's basically, it's Mad Max Fury Road meets Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, shit. Okay.
it's crackheads and the apocalypse.
Woo. Damn. That is quite the
There's image. Good people, and good people know good people. And we know, you know, somebody that knows somebody, and that's how it got done. Just like the Camaro, Bo Perez, who's, you know, unfortunately passed away too. He threw me the keys of that and said, I go, well, I'm going to need it more than a couple nights. He goes, keep it as long as you want. I go, but it might be like a month. He goes, keep it as long as you want.
Oh, shit.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But with that said, you respect them and you return it back in the right shape and all that kind of stuff.
Treat people the way you want to be treated.
There you go. And Noodle Dome, he got in that fucking Camaro and the whole car started leaning to the right. So we had to get the shocks and stuff fixed it in. So.
Oh, that's funny.
It wasn't Noodle Dome rated.
That makes sense. He's a big one. That's funny. I mean, he's going through chairs and shit like that too. Now he's just dropping cars.
He's
like
the sweetest guy in the world too. He's a great dude. He'll have a lot more in part two.
That's good. I mean, I'm assuming non-speaking because he didn't speak in the whole time.
But I'll give this little tidbit. He uses a talk box now that he can type like a Siri thing, and it's going to speak for him on the things. It's just always seems like it's a second or two too late.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, you get where I'm going with that?
I get where you're going. Oh, that's going to be funny. So, yeah, I got a question then. When I watched Circus of the Dead, I noticed some elements that almost appear like Rob Zombie may have been influenced by your style, especially when you look at Popcorn versus Doomhead from 31. Was there ever an instance where Rob Zombie may have approached you and used you as an influence? Because Circus of the Dead came out long before 31.
Right. Okay. When early on, I think 15, when I was trying to pimp it out to things and stuff, is John 5 come to town to do a concert when he was with Zombie and everything. And I gave him a Circus of the Dead Viewmaster, which, because I know he likes retro toys, and I gave him the movie, and I heard that he watched the movie on the tour bus and said, you know, hey, let Rob check this out. Now, whether or not that ever did or not, I don't know. But, you know, less than 2 years later, you know, or a couple years later, you get 31. Do I think he ripped me off? No.
No.
Do I think that I would never made this if it wasn't for House of a Thousand Corpses? Yes. So it's like, you know, it would only be turnabout fair play. I wish I could have helped him write it. You know, I could have done that. Part two was going to be that, you know, whole May stuff, because that's what I did in Doll Boy. But then when he did that, it completely changed part two whatsoever. Right. So that kind of upset me, because you'd get to see a lot of the Doll Boy and Pepe the Mime, the Chainsaw Juggling Mime. You get to see a lot of Popcorn's freak creations. There'll be four of them in this next movie.
Damn.
There'll be the Wild Woman of Borneo, and then you'll meet Buddy Bill Bear.
Buddy Bill Bear?
Buddy Bill Bear.
Is that going to be you?
No. It's going to be my brother. I got a brother who's damn near 7 foot and about 450.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I saw a guy the other day. I swear to God, he must have been like...
Is this the guy we saw?
Yes. He must have been 7'5". I looked up at him and I'm like, you got to be another whole human being above me. And I'm not short. I mean, I'm 5'8". So me to look up at that high, I'm like, fuck, man. Where do you buy clothes? Shit.
So that's what I'm saying. He's like, it'll be pretty cool. You'll dig Buddy Bill Bear and stuff. Sometimes I wish I had individual movies on each of them, but I got some stuff pretty cool that's set up for part two. And I guess the one thing I'll tell you about part two is it's going to be very unorthodox as far as the movie goes. Okay. I'm going to do things that I don't know that's been done before in any movies, just because last time I tried to make a movie and a lot of things that I wanted to do or something I didn't because I was afraid. I think this time I'm just going to, you know, get rid of that fear and let it go that away and think that it's going to be the right thing because of these fans I met and go out and talk to these people about the first one and stuff like that. I'm going to fan service. I'm going to do what Marvel and Star Wars always fucks up on. Is what I'm going to try to do.
Well, yeah, Marvel thinks they know better now. And it's like, no, not quite. No, we've seen what you've been putting out lately.
The fans know.
Oh, yeah. The fans absolutely know. We're not stupid.
And the Circus of the Dead fans, you know, they say what they like and, you know, this and that, and we'll see. I get a lot of Art the Clown is, you know, because David loved the movie, too. He likes Circus of the Dead a lot. So he's seen it, and I post things in there every once in a while. We got a lot of people from there and stuff, but I think ours just scares him a lot. He's got a lot of those goody two-shoe girls and stuff in the Terrifier group, and right. They don't like our grape as much, so.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It can be a little abrasive.
They think Art the Clown is like some sweet, and it's what's funny is they turn him into a sex symbol. They did the same thing with popcorn.
It's so fucking weird to me.
You know.
Well, it's like the same where girls are just writing to serial killers and shit in prison. You know, sometimes they think like that. I don't know why they consider that bad boy. That's not bad boy. That's a bad human being.
That's just stupidity. What is that thing? Is they want Art in the street and Papa in the bed.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, we did hear some rumors about David Howard Thornton being in Circus of the Dead too.
Yeah. It's supposed to happen.
That's supposed to happen. Okay. Because, I mean, I was joking around a little bit about it, about Popcorn versus Art the Clown, almost like a Freddy versus Jason deal.
Yeah. We made up some rare posters that was Papa versus Art, and I gave them away free at Frightmare whenever David and Damien was there last time. Maybe we'll do it up again.
Oh, yeah. I'll give them out free.
Yeah. And they're pretty cool, and I don't sell them because, you know, I don't have no rights over Art, but I feel I'll give them out to the fans for free.
I saw them in the Art the Clown group on Facebook. Carrie was giving some away, I believe.
Carrie. Yeah, she's been a big champion this too. She bought one of the acting perks too, so she could be in the movie to get killed in our movie also. And I think she's been killed in a bunch of movies now.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
She got killed in Terrifier too.
Yep, but we're gonna outdo that. I told her. I said we ain't doing no little Swiss cheese, you know, bullet hole boobies. We're gonna do something bigger and better.
No, just go balls to the wall. You got him.
I love Carrie. That's where the secret is. Is people like Carrie is who's going to help the indie directors, you know, because they are fucking big time horror fans.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Corey, you got another question?
Okay. So Bill Oberst is the perfect Papa Corn. How did you decide to cast him to play the character? Because I honestly don't think anyone else could have played him as well as Bill.
Okay. There's people out there that'll say, this ain't true, but this is the God's honest truth. Is before I cast them, I started making a small list, right? And I had about, I don't know, 10 people on that list. And the first thing I did is when I searched on Google, it like took me to this link, said the top 10 scary indie actors to watch out for. And Bill was on there. So I wrote him on the list. And then there's some other people. I made a post about years ago. I might ought to repost it because it's an interesting thing. And then when I started watching his stuff, his reels and stuff, I go, wow, this guy's unbelievable. But then I said, okay, I'll reach out to him. So I wrote him on Facebook Messenger, and I said, we're mutual friends through a reviewer or something. I said, what do you think of this person? And she said, he's a really good guy. He would be really good for Popcorn. But then when I wrote him, I said, hey, I got this character named Popcorn, da-da-da-da-da. I said, he goes, yeah, send me the script. I'll take a look at it. I sent him the script, and it wasn't even 2 hours later. He wrote back and said how much he loved it. Then we started talking, but I fell in love with the dude. He's just, like I said, the sweetest, most professional person you'll ever work with on a film set, you know? Because I wasn't a real film set. You know, this dude's been on Rob Zombie film sets and shit. He's like, you know, who am I? And I didn't know what I was doing. So it was kind of learning, you know, I was learning as I was going, and he didn't make me feel bad about it at all.
Oh, that's awesome. Because, I mean, he sees that you probably did like a few short films, and it's like your first feature length, and you know he's got the acting chops and he's got the experience. The fact that he's willing to help out is a test of the guy he is. You know,
he's done a shitload of movies, and every film he's been in, no matter how bad the movie, he's always awesome.
Yeah,
it's just I always tell people this, and it sounds corny, so y'all can call me out if it sounds too corny, but he's like having a fucking Porsche or a Lamborghini or a fucking racehorse. You're not gonna get him just a tie up in a corral. Let the motherfucker act. That's what he does, and that's what makes him great. That's like David Thornton is like, his pantomime is great and stuff, and they couldn't have done it without that, but he was picking up Art from another. Remember, he was in another movie with somebody else acting as it, so I get what he's doing. But now it's time, let's get David into something where he can act and show off his skills too. That's what was with Bill's, like I said, this guy's like a fucking racehorse. And once I started seeing what he could do in act, and that's me sitting on set and making notes and all this kind of stuff, man, it worked out fucking perfect. Once he channeled Papa, man, it was all she wrote.
Oh, yeah. I can see him flipping to just a whole different being, essentially, because...
It does on set, you guys, and when you're watching the monitor, you know, when they're filming what they're filming live, and I'm getting goosebumps, and I'm thinking, holy shit, this is fucking weird and eerie. Then I said, this has got to be at least, at worst, a decent movie.
Yeah.
Well,
if you're feeling that way, you know it's going to turn out good.
Right. The moment you get goosebumps is when you know you're onto something. Because
you
I
know
was reading
what
an article. What? Oh, which one?
It was the head fucking when he was talking to Parrish when Parrish was tied to that scene.
Yeah.
That's the moment when we shot that scene. I felt dirty, but yet happy at the same time. And I knew we were onto something.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is that Popcorn can almost be seen as the good guy in that scene. Now, hear me out. Because, obviously, the wife was cheating on Donald, right? Donald. Yes Donald.
The hussy. Wife was,
the hussy, that Jezebel, that floozy. That I was trying to think of every name in the book like that wasn't super derogatory, even though this is pretty derogatory, like back in the, I don't know, 40s maybe. But he started fucking her head.
Yeah.
And I'm like...
Well, now, see, what y'all missed, though, if you look closer... The name of that head is Noodle Dome names all his things. It turned into Penela Pink because he sewed a Asian girl's vagina into the mouth of that, his wife's mouth.
So I didn't even notice that.
Look at it closer during that scene. It shows a shot sitting on his desk before Papa grabs it, and it's got a vagina sewn in its mouth. Now, the effects guys messed up a little bit. The vagina was supposed to be horizontal. Because I was going to make that joke about since it was an Asian girl, it was horizontal in the mouth. But we didn't. They missed that part on it. But maybe we'll get to fix that in the next movie with somebody else.
Yeah, someone else's head. But I remember him saying, like, she was cheating on you anyway. She deserved it. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I mean, I'd be pretty pissed, too, if I had a wife and she was cheating on me. I don't know if I'd cut her head off and fuck it. But I'd still be pretty upset. So he was, like, almost doing the right thing, but a complete extreme way.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, too, as you guys said, I think the only thing that I was listening to y'all talk where I thought, I don't think that conveyed perfectly clear, but when he spots the wife, Popcorn, he sees her, you know, and he's like, okay, I'd fuck that, right?
Yeah.
But then he sees Parrish, Donald, and he goes, what is this dude? Then he sees him being a zombie, like he's not even there and present for his family. Then he holds up these cards, and when he says Bingo was his name-o, you could see the Los Niños cards, the kids. You could see the La Sirena card, which was the temptress, and you can't see the third card, which is under there, which turns out to be the La Muerte card, death card.
Yep.
See, that's where the whole thing was said, and the whole movie's right there is when it said.
Okay.
But, yeah.
That's so where I needed clarification. Okay.
Yes. See, that's the hard thing with the movie making is you can have the greatest script in the world. If you can't visualize it when you film it, it gets tough too.
Right.
So yeah, that's it. But no, that's what it was basically there is, you know, he can fuck or rape anything he wants. And that was one thing. But when he saw him, he just knew, hey, we need to intervene in this guy's life because he's taking shit for granted. Let's show him it could always be a lot fucking worse.
You know what? I kind of got that idea, too, because, like, having him do all these fucking things, like, he's trying to get him to, like, be a different version of himself.
Yes.
So it's almost like he's just being, like, trying to guide him, almost be a spirit guide. And just, like, at some point, some people get like that where they live this mundane life and they don't do anything and just go by the motions. And it seems like that's what Donald was doing, but he had a smoking hot wife at the same time.
But it still doesn't give her the reason to do what she did.
Of course.
Originally, the black cop TC, I had him out to be the town playboy and stuff like that. But then I was thinking, you know, why does he have to be a bad guy too? There's a lot of racism in the world too. And I've had other people come up and say that. They said, you know what was the worst part about your film? Was when she is with the black guy. And I go, man, that's what's wrong with the fucking world right there. Is like, no, you would think it would have been the raping or the head fucking, but no, that's what we're at too in life. It's like sad that things
can grow up.
Like, yeah. But this shit's real, you guys. When you make this, you'd be surprised the people that come to you at conventions or watch you and stuff. There's some crazy people, but I think that stuff needs to be in movies and stuff because it happens more than you know as far as the younger person with the cougars and stuff like that. So it just seems realistic, I guess. And if you watch the Taylor Sheridan thing, it don't get more soap opera-ish than that.
Yeah.
I guess Circus of the Dead was a little bit of that, but with some more carnage.
Right.
So
yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of carnage in that movie. So people would come up to you like at conventions
I've had a couple
and say
of
that shit?
Say that. They said that was the scariest part. That's what they didn't like about the film.
God,
or that was,
come on.
Yeah.
Come
I'm
on.
Not even fucking with you, so. Like,
now, let I me ask you this then.
But that's why I did it. I knew it was going to be sad because that's the freaking world we live in.
That is the world we live in, unfortunately. Now, would you say anything back to them? Like, well, that's fucked up, man. Or would you have to like bite your tongue and just be like, well, I thank you for your feedback. And
I
then
think
just...
the early person was, I was bite my tongue in the early days, but now I'm happy. I'm more rebellious now, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell them, hey, you're the one with the problem on there that bothers you.
Yeah.
You know, I said, did somebody drop a black person on your head when you're young? What happened?
Jesus Christ.
I just say, let's push it, you know. Another script I had, I wanted to make it all the teenagers and stuff be, you know, young black people and stuff like that. And that's what I said. I had another person was complaining about. I said, you know what? That makes me think that's what I need to do. So that was a script called Sundown.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good one, too. So we'll see if anything happens on that. Next, I'd really like to do Cowboys from Hell, which I was going to do with Brad Potts, who was in the first one that played the trooper that got run over.
Yeah. Yep. I remember that.
We're going to do it and everything's on. And but he passed away and I was like, I can't do it without him right now. So let's go to Circus and let's get that one done. And then we'll go back to Cowboys from Hell. But Cowboys from Hell is probably my best script I've ever written. It's definitely an epic Western, but like mixed with Evil Dead and stuff. And it's really good and really, really nasty and dirty.
Oh, no shit. Okay. That sounds interesting. I could fuck with that.
And,
I would love to check that out. Like,
a tribute to, you know, Pantera, Cowboys from Hell and Texas and all.
I figured much. No, we're a bunch of metalheads here, believe us.
And not to mention, is that not the coolest fucking title in life?
Yeah. It's one of the best fucking names out there of all time. Cowboys from Hell. It's memorable.
So let's make that movie happen next is what I want to do.
Yeah, you should. So do you have an Indiegogo happening right now or a GoFundMe for the movie?
We met our goal and everything, but once you meet your goal, you can go on in demand.
Mm-hmm.
And since we're in demand, they let us go as long as we want. So we're going to roll it until we can film because we're about to crack 100,000, but I need to get up to about 150 to be comfortable and get everything we need for part two. Because we're going to spend a lot more money on the special effects this time because I feel like Terrifier 2 and 3, you know, really kind of set the bar high on that shit. Now, I'll kick their ass on fucking story and plot, but not to be a dick, but they're kicking some fucking serious ass in that special effects shit, and I need to catch the fuck up, so.
Well, to be honest, I thought your special effects looked great. I didn't any flaws with them.
Well, there is just, we needed more of the, Lee Ankrum, my buddy that passed away, is our, the workshop and Noodle Dome and stuff like that, and all the little Debbie Crumb cakes or snack cakes and the swan. There's a whole side story where when Parrish Donald wakes up, aka Donald wakes up, those dead women are talking to him. And even Penelope with her lips, her vagina lips moving and stuff, he's having this drug thing because, you know, they drugged him and everything. And like that we couldn't do because we couldn't pull him off with the props and stuff we had. So I was always regretting that. I got a cut now showing him, you know, or a cut of the movie where you can hear what they're saying. We had it all voiced over, but, you know, nothing's moving on them. So it's just he's hearing in the head. It was okay, too, but I just decided to cut it for time.
Oh, fair enough. Sometimes you just have to cut the fat a little bit and just stick with.
And it's hard to do with your own movie because it's like your baby.
Oh, I'm aware. I do a lot of audio editing for the podcast and I go, maybe I can get rid of this part. You know, that type of stuff. If it's not even necessary, we're just rambling on.
You could cut 3/4 of my rambling out tonight. So
I just kill the dead space and I just get rid of all that. There was one time I cut, Corey, how much time did I cut once when we went off on this rant about porridge?
Dude, it happens every fucking week.
It does. It
you
really...
cut something off. We're talking about corn all the time.
Yeah.
Or porridge. Like, just we get on these dumb ADHD topics and we don't stop.
But you know those,
you
that makes me
out.
Think of the Three Bears and stuff too. See, that's where I like to be putting in the corners. Like somebody goes, okay, you got to make a horror movie about the Three Bears. What would you do? Go. Like, I love that kind of shit. You know what I mean? I think it challenges people. Now, I'm not going to say shit on a podcast because I know these motherfuckers would steal shit sometimes, you know, on these people listening and stuff. So
fair. Yep.
that's why I'm careful with some of my other scripts and stuff. But
yeah,
I don't let it out. I don't let Circus out. I'm going to only give the people their parts and stuff. So we're going to keep it pretty under wraps for the most part.
Oh, that's a good idea. I mean, you never know.
The ending is going to be cray-cray, you guys, and I don't want that to get out. But you're going to want to see it when we premiere it early on in the theaters and stuff, so that way, you know, it's like M. Night Shyamalan. If somebody goes, oh, they're all dead. He was dead the whole time.
And he's like, well, the movie's ruined. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get to see it in New Hampshire or Massachusetts, because all the theaters we were going to see all these independent films have literally been closed within the past few months. So
well, y'all might
I don't
have
know
to
if
organize
we'll have an option.
A screening or something on that night.
Yeah, well, we might have to fly down to Texas.
There you go. Well, we're going to try to get it out at Mann's and everything. My dream is to put one out at Mann's and for the premiere maybe out there in Hollywood. That's my dream anyway.
Yeah. Any thoughts of like doing almost a like a tour of all these horror conventions and then like screening the film that way?
I definitely will do that. I think what I would do first and foremost is I'm going to try to get it in to really big film festivals.
Right,
and
like Cannes or something like that.
And if I can't do that, then we're going to just hit the theaters. And then I can start giving it out to some of those other ones, because it got bootlegged really bad last time by some of those film festivals.
Really? No shit. That's
I put
that's
weird edits in different things. You know, those pirate bays and all that kind of stuff. I can tell like which festival leaked them because I put a weird edit in each one I gave everybody. And so I would know this kind of thing. So, but I ain't going to tell anybody.
Yeah, no, just keep that under the radar. And then you go, all right, I'm tracking this shit. Yep. I mean, you could put a watermark or some shit too, which can drive people a little crazy. I mean, we watched a movie recently where the watermark was fucking ginormous. It was almost like a banner ad in the middle of the movie. Ugh.
Yeah, it's running your movie at that point.
We get screeners sent to us all the time, and the watermarks can like it's our logo. It says 30 screams or less, literally like half the screen in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go away.
I'm just like, well, it's cool that it can see our podcast name the whole time. I get that, but it's blocking the movie.
Yeah. No, usually the best way for me is like I'll assign that film festival an alphabet and hide it somewhere really tiny in a certain place in every movie, and that's where I'll know.
Oh, good idea. Corey, you got one more question?
Yeah, I just got one question. You kind of touched on it. I was just curious if Circus of the Dead 2 is your next project or if you've got something
absolutely.
Else down the line.
120% it is, yes.
Okay, because I know you were mentioning Cowboys from Hell, which yes. you want to do that too. Obviously, you have to pick one or the other to start first. So I'm assuming then Circus of the Dead 2 is going to be like the next in the pipeline.
Yes, totally. And I guess depending on if that did Terrifier, it might take a part 3. But I don't know that we would do a part 3 of Circus. So I'm not
Does
big
it start
on milking.
Filming next year?
Right now we're eyeballing March, early spring.
Okay. Do you hope to have it out next year as well?
I would like to have it hitting next Halloween, at least as far as, you know, a premiere or a screening or something. Yeah. But if I could have it out by then, that would be even better.
Cool. You can release it on my birthday. It's actually Halloween.
Oh, there you go.
See, that would be a perfect time to put it out. Like, get it ready for fucking August, September, release in October, because that's when people want to see horror movies the most.
But it's like, because I think Terrifier, they really opened up the fucked up crazy shit for us. So hopefully people do it. But boy, it's just like we said before, you guys, it's a whole different fucking monster when you just even add the thought of rape in something or child molestation. People freak the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one scene where
they boycott shit even if you have it.
That's true. I mean, there was the one scene in there. I'm like, is Popcorn like raping a teenager right now? I'm like,
he's got no. See, that's what when you write this kind of shit, you guys, you got to put what would that person do kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And in part two, he goes into his childhood and stuff like this and kind of what makes him tick. I'm not going to do no weird flashbacks or nothing because I don't believe in that kind of shit. But he tells the person he had a pretty regular childhood and his parents were married and divorced when he was a teen. And just I don't think anything like that. I just kind of do what I want to do. And that's what I'm going to do. So he just has no conscience.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. Well, he doesn't have. Well, I think he might have a conscience, but his conscience is just clearly like. He has a vision.
Yes.
He's very deliberate and he knows what he wants. He knows what he wants to do. His conscience is like, this is the right thing to do.
Yes.
And that's what
he's big on teaching you a lesson.
Yeah. And that's what he does is his morals. They're awful, right? He's got awful morals.
Very much. Yes.
Very much so. But it seems like his head is in the right place on what he wants to do to people. It's almost like, you know, going back to the whole Donald thing, he's trying to get him to like get out of that normal mundane life that he's living. He's like a necessary evil.
Yes. And everything else in the world is disposable, even his friends and stuff. He has no love or loyalty to anything.
No, he just wants pure chaos and that's it.
And the closest thing is his clowns. But it just something says to me is if something happens to any of the other ones, I don't think he'd give two shits. Wink, wink.
Yeah, he really wouldn't. I always thought that was funny about like the people in the show, the clown that got his hand cut off and sewed back on and they're just beating him like that's part of the show. I'm like, What kind of circus is that? Where people just like just enjoying someone getting beat up, and then
that's the pulling things off with what script. But basically, it's like the people are so into not really being present that you can't even tell when somebody's getting their ass kicked. But that was a very big play on the Rodney King thing.
Good point.
They'll have a new skit for part two. They got a new skit they're doing, but I'm not going to tell you what that is. But there's a new skit that they're doing like that. It's like I'm trying. Cause you always hear like George Romero had, you know, the political world satire in his movies and stuff. So that's what I was trying to do too with that. But yeah, we could have pulled it off better. But what happened is we filmed with the first actor that we had to fire. We filmed three nights with him, and we only had Parrish for one night to do all the circus stuff out there. So we didn't have as much footage. I got more footage on the other guy that got fired, you know, with all the people and stuff there. So we had to kind of mush that together a little bit to make that work. But now the guy that got his hand cut off, he's from Dollboys. He's the survivor from the Dollboys short. And this picks up right after Dollboy. They take him to the thing. And that was his big deal in Dollboy, was he cared more about his watch than human life. See, that's why he says, hey, nice watch, asshole.
Yeah.
And so it ties back to Dollboy. Yeah.
They chopped his hand off just to take the watch.
I mean, they could have just unclipped it. But no, they decided to cut the hand off and take it off the other way.
And then you set it up with the dwarf clown tripping over the cord.
yeah. And it gets unplugged and they're like, oh, what the fuck?
But you should laugh at Hort. When you go see Terrifier, you laugh because some shit's funny. The salt or him slapping that girl on the head this past one. And there's things you're supposed to laugh at. Now, that chainsaw scene in this new Terrifier is like, motherfucker, boy, that was good.
Yeah, with his fucking dick and balls flapping everywhere. And he's just like,
good stuff. They raised the bar on that one.
Yeah,
Cole got it bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was better than any chainsaw movie effects, I thought. But they set the bar on that one. And Pepe the Chainsaw Juggling Mime's in my movie. And he's got to raise the bar on that, too. So there will be some of that stuff, too.
Nice. We were talking to David about that, about mixing comedy and horror. And that I've always felt that adding some comedy elements helps to take people down a little bit before you throw them back into chaos. You know, it just kind of mellows them out for a second. It's like, okay, they get a break and they get something funny. It's like that false sense of security. And
it's what you're saying there. Think about what you just said. Is that's my whole viewpoint on the movie, is what you try to do is at the front of a movie, I'll give you something interesting to look at. They go out the stairs, they go into the circus, then I go into a long little open, so that way you can adjust yourself in your seat. Okay, what did we just see? We just saw this. They said clowns can get away with murder. Okay, what did that mean? And then you kind of start the movie. I feel like the slowest part is right after the credits. And if I can make sure nothing like that happens this time and keep it just pedal to the metal the whole time is what I'm going to try to do.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Going pedal to the metal is always a great thing. I got one more question for you. You might have touched base on it, though, based on Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And that is a favorite horror movie of all time.
Yes, that's it. 74.
I figured much because
if you want some more, I can give you Exorcist. I'll give you Shining. I'll give you the original Halloween. I love the Tourist Trap. And I know Shining was 80, but most everything it seems like I kind of liked is the 70s for some reason. I don't know.
I think horror movies were still like kind of in their early heyday. You know, they were still trying to figure out what the fuck like they're putting out there. I mean, obviously Halloween came out in the 70s, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 70s. And this is where you started developing those horror icons. And then like Friday the 13th, early 80s. And then it just kind of took off from there. So that's where it all started. That's basically, I mean, horror was around for a very long time.
To me, the 70s is, I want to be a filmmaker, but I'm a horror filmmaker. And just because you're a horror filmmaker doesn't mean you got to make things look bad. And the 70s, to me, just looked always cinematic. It's like the heyday of that Jaws, you know, that kind of stuff. It just looked beautiful and big and grandioso and just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Jaws, one of my favorite movies of all time, by the
way. Me too. I love that movie,
Yeah, I watch it in theaters every summer. Without fail, every summer I have to go see it in theaters. I love it. It's fucking great. It stands the test of time.
It's like the Halloween 78. It's a blueprint on how to make a good movie.
Yep. And you only find funny about it, it's rated PG.
Yeah. In today's standards, But you know, I like the first Human Centipede too. You know, people talk about how that's too wrong. I was like, it wasn't bad over the top. It was a great horror movie.
I loved all of them, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, I met them at Texas Frightmare Weekend, Dieter Laser, and that played the doctor, and then the director, Tom Six,
nicest fucking people in the world, you guys.
Really?
Yeah. I met the guy that played the doctor as well. I think Rocket Shock when they used to do that.
He was like the nicest damn dude in the world. Now the nicest guy I've ever met at a horror convention, hands down, would be Angus Scrimm, the tall man from Phantasm.
Okay. Oh, yep. Okay. Wow.
He was hands down the sweetest person I ever met at a horror convention.
No shit. Oh, geez. I mean, we've met some really nice people. David Mears.
Derek Mears.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know why I said it. Derek Mears. He was awesome. So nice.
He was really nice, too.
Yeah, and he was telling us shit that, he didn't tell anyone else about, the video game he was involved in and how it got taken down from the PlayStation store in, 5 seconds. yeah, and then we bumped into him again at, a restaurant. We're like, oh, hey. And, he was just really nice.
He should have had a bigger career, too.
For sure. Yeah. Every person I've met, minus one, which we won't name, Corey knows all too well. They've all been pretty receptive and great and just thankful. It seems like they really care about their fans.
Yeah, I think so too. But who are you without your fans, man?
Nothing. Nothing at all. I mean, you're a fucking actor and no one gives a shit. Yeah. You're just kind of background guy.
And the more popular you are and the good you treat them, then you get better things happening to you. You know, you get your name out there more and then things start taking off.
Yep. You catch more bees with honey than vinegar, right?
There you go. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a saying. Corey, you got any more questions?
No, I'm all set. He answered everything I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
Will we revisit whenever part two comes out and everything? Or
yes.
We would love to.
I'll extend to when we do the crew screening in Odessa, Texas or something. Y'all fucking, if you find a way down here, we'll get you into the screening.
Fuck yeah. I get credits for flights anyway, so I might as well. It's like just sitting there doing jack shit.
Yeah, well, we have to keep in touch, Billy, because we're texting
please
now.
Please do, guys.
So.
Please do.
Yeah, I'll be sure to add you as a friend on Facebook because we're not friends on it at the moment. But, Billy, it's been awesome having you on this podcast.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, thank you for digging into the movie so well because I really dug what you guys were saying and I really feel like you paid attention.
Oh, yeah, no problem. We were hooked from the beginning. Movie's fucking wild. And we can't wait to see what's going to happen with Circus of the Dead 2. Is there a specific link that you want to guide people to? Like, I don't know if you have circusofthedead.com where you can, people can go to.
I have circusofthedeadmovie.com, but instead of that, go to bloodybill.com.
Okay, and can people find a link there to direct them to the GoFundMe?
I don't know about the GoFundMe, but we do have our Etsy store, or you can contact me, and then I can send you. On Facebook, you can find Indiegogo, but if you go to Indiegogo, you can probably just type in Circus of the Dead and find us, too.
Okay, yeah. So everyone listening, be sure to go to Indiegogo.com, look for Circus of the Dead 2, be sure to invest, because it's got all sorts of cool things. Like, you have the DVDs and shit for it, or... basically everything on it.
Yeah, we're even talking, we're going to make some dildos out of the original popcorn mold.
Steve and I were looking at the web store the other day, and I'm like, I really kind of want that shirt with popcorn and the painted dick.
Yeah. That's funny. And I think we saw in there we can actually get our name in the credits. So
that's right. Yeah, it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, we might have to partake in that. Get a little.
We even got weird ones too, like bad motherfuckers. Thanks, Liv. Thanks to these bad motherfuckers for donating that in the credits. And then there's like really funny ones, like you could put in friends or family or people you don't like in any name you want to and stuff. And
there's one in there, Steve.
That's dig through it. There's some really funny stuff hidden in there too.
Oh my God. The amount of people I could just throw in there.
Yes.
Fuck it. That's like the ultimate burden, that you paid to get them in the movie credits for bad motherfuckers.
Yeah. Or put kids. Sometimes you got kids and, they're like little infants now or something. When they grow up later, you go, hey, your name's on that movie. And they go, what?
Yeah. Looks like you have 94,000 at the moment.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I want to get to 150.
Yep. Let's get you to 150. Everyone, be sure to pick your perks for the Indiegogo campaign. Donate. There's all sorts of cool stuff. Special thanks credits, meta screen print, all sorts of cool things. So definitely be sure to show your support for Circus of the Dead 2. Billy, again, it's been awesome having you on here. Very insightful. And I'm glad that we got to learn more about Circus of the Dead because we did have questions about it. So it was very cool.
I love the questions. Thank you guys so much.
No problem.
Yes, thank you, Billy.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Y'all tag me when you post this and we'll get it spreaded.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah, spread like chlamydia.
Fair enough. Thanks, Billy. All right, see you
have
later.
Good night.
Take care. All right, everyone, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review on all podcast platforms so we can get some more exposure. Of course, tell your friends. Both our intro and outro music are courtesy of Andrew Scott Bell. Be sure to check out Andrew on all major streaming platforms. And if you see Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey on vinyl in the wild, be sure to pick it up. We're also part of the Shining Wizards Network. Be sure to visit shiningwizardsnetwork.com. They're an awesome podcast network ranging from wrestling to heavy metal, horror, all that good stuff. So check that out. Visit 30screamsorless.com for all previous episodes and transcripts to go with those episodes. Also, check out beardoctane.com for their whole line of grooming supplies. And be sure to use the code 30screams10 at checkout for 10% off your order. And if there's anything you want us to review, send an email to 30screamsorless@gmail.com or hit us up on social media. Use hashtag 30screamsorless. And also, we have some awesome merch for sale on our website, so definitely check that out. If you go to our website, at the very top, there's a shop link. Click that link, and you'll see all sorts of shirts, hats, mugs, things like that. If you buy it, it helps going towards our hosting costs. I'm Steve.
I'm Corey.
And thanks for listening to 30 Screams or Less. And don't forget to drink your beans.